Please be seated. Oftentimes when I begin preparing a sermon, after I've looked at the lectionary readings for that particular Sunday, I will go to my files to see what I've preached about in the past on that particular Sunday. And I think I'd do this first to make sure that I don't repeat myself too often. But I also do it, I think, to see if it might spark any ideas. More often than not, it doesn't spark any ideas. But looking at those files will often stir up memories. And I'll find myself for a little while doing more reminiscing than anything else. I did that this week for the first Sunday of Epiphany. And the first thing I noticed, to my surprise, was there were only two sermons in that file. Now, that didn't make sense. I've just celebrated being ordained a priest for my 13th anniversary. And as I thought about that, I began to realize that I'm usually not here this Sunday. I think that I either take a post-Christmas Sunday off, or for several years have been attending the college football national championship, which sadly was not necessary this year. But I also realized that on this first Sunday of Epiphany, year B, that this Sunday has marked some pretty significant occasions in my life as a priest. I was ordained in December of 2002, and this Sunday, the first Sunday of Epiphany, was the first time I baptized someone back in my parish in Alabama. I realized that this first Sunday of Epiphany was the first Sunday I spent with you as your rector 9 years ago today. I realized that this Sunday was the first time that we all squeezed into Batten Hall to worship while we renovated this space into the glorious space that it is 6 years ago today. That's all hard for me to believe. And while I can't say that any of that was particularly orchestrated, I came to realize just how much of my life has been marked by new things, new beginnings, on this, the first Sunday of Epiphany. Now, new beginnings, not to be confused with New Year's resolutions, most of which I had already broken by this time. And I guess these new beginnings are somewhat fitting, because to an extent, that's what the season of Epiphany is about. Epiphany literally means God made manifest. It is, in a way, the church's response to Christmas. It's a season that varies in length, depending on when Easter falls, where we get snippets and snapshots of who this Christ child we just celebrated really is. The day of Epiphany, which is January 6th, is marked by the visit of the wise men, the kings, to honor the baby Jesus. And this first Sunday following the day of Epiphany is marked by the beginning of Jesus' ministry, his baptism by John. And in this story, we hear some of the most precious words ever spoken. You are my beloved. And aside from trying to do a yearly recitation of a theology of baptism, I wonder if that belovedness is perhaps the most important understanding, the most important beginning that we could all take with us as we journey through this season together. I told the Wednesday night group about an article that I'd read this week that spoke of this belovedness. And it began with this question: how often do you think of your baptism? Now, all of us can recall our children's baptism or the times that we might have stood at a baptism as sponsors or godparents, but how often do you think of your baptism? And the truth be told, we probably don't think of it very much. But maybe we should. Maybe we should, because there may be no more important event in our lives. And this article goes on to try to explain this by noting that our culture seems to be consumed with this need for affirmation. And I'm not sure that's anything new, but maybe it is more prevalent these days. Now think about it. You can Twitter, Tumblr, text, Instagram to friends, fans, and followers with the touch of a button. You can put something on Facebook. Some of you shouldn't, but you can put something on Facebook and watch the comments and the likes just roll in. In sports these days, kids routinely are given a trophy or a medal for participation. We have always craved affirmation, but it seems that today that affirmation comes in some plentiful doses. And there's nothing wrong with that, but deep down inside, we know that it doesn't mean that much, or at least we should know that. We know that it's superficial, but the truth is, it's better than nothing. Yet study after study shows that the more connected we've become as a culture, the lonelier we are. How can that be? Of course, there's a lot of reasons. But this author contends that while we may crave affirmation, what we really need is acceptance. Acceptance that doesn't mean just fitting in or being included, but an acceptance that is simply being valued for who we are, just as we are. And that's where baptism comes in. When Jesus is baptized, that voice from heaven is personal and poignant and powerful. You are my beloved. In you, I am so very well pleased. And wrapped in those words of acceptance are the blessings of identity and worth and unwavering regard. And also notice that these words come in the beginning. They come in the beginning of Jesus' ministry, before he's done a single thing. And later, as Jesus casts out demons and heals the sick and feeds the hungry and welcomes the outcast, he's only doing what's already been done for him, telling them through word and deed that they too are beloved children of God, in whom God is well pleased. What if you and I and the whole world could somehow come to truly believe that who we are is not a factor of what we do or how we're affirmed, but instead begins with the word beloved? Would people feel differently about themselves? Would people feel differently about each other? That's why perhaps the best thing we could do for ourselves during this season of Epiphany is to think of our own baptisms, an act that offers us acceptance, not merely affirmation, but acceptance of the creator of the universe, and empowers us to in turn accept others. A reminder that wherever we go and whatever we may do or have done to us, that God continues to love us, accept us, and hold on to us just because of who we are, his beloved. And for a world that has been sold on cheap affirmation as a substitute for genuine acceptance, there may be no more powerful place to begin. A belovedness that overflows with mercy and grace, a belovedness that mends hearts aching to be new and heals souls wanting to begin again. What if we truly believed that? What if that was our starting point? Could we perhaps keep saying it enough to ourselves and to each other that it could make a difference? Could we believe it enough that it becomes a part of us and we never know ourselves as anything else than beloved? Could we believe it enough that we began by trying to see the belovedness in each other? Beloved children of God, with whom God is so very well pleased. Could something that simple change the world? I don't know. But it has before, because it really is all about where we begin. God love you. Amen.